Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks for joining me again this week. We've got a great show for you. We've got a very interesting guest that I think you'll get a laugh out of. And we've got some pretty important stuff to talk about, considering everything that's happened within the law enforcement community in the last couple of weeks. So, without further ado, before we go into the interview room, let's take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room, headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
This week saw another absolutely horrendous mass killing. And there are so many issues involved here related to law enforcement. So here's what we know. An individual who had been discharged from the United States Air Force after a bad conduct discharge, went into a rural church where people were celebrating their God and killed 28 of them, shot 20 more. He went in there with a semi-automatic rifle. He was wearing tactical gear, body armor, walked into this little Texas town, into the church, and just opened fire. His carnage is beyond belief, coming only about a month after the mass killing, the worst mass shooting in the United States' history that occurred in Las Vegas. Now we have the worst mass shooting in a church and the worst mass shooting in Texas that occurred just a month later. So, what happened here? Where are the lessons to be learned? Here's what we do know. This punk, this suspect, 26 years old, had been canned out of the Air Force for beating his wife and his child. He had served 12 months in a military prison. He was discharged under less than honorable circumstances. Now, what I came to find out, and I wasn't aware of this, is that there are several different ways that you can be discharged. The honorable discharge, of course, then there's general discharge. Then there is another type of discharge, which is for bad conduct. And then there is the dishonorable discharge. Now, here's the deal. I wasn't aware of this, but the United States military, if they discharge you for a dishonorable discharge, then that relinquishes your right to purchase a weapon. And by all the criteria in the military, this individual, this punk, should have been dishonorably discharged, but he wasn't. He should have actually been serving up to 5 years for his crimes. They gave him a year and they dumped him out of the service. He then purchased this weapon legally only because the United States military dropped the ball and didn't enter into the National Crime Information Center's computer reference background checks that this individual had already been convicted of domestic violence. And when this suspect went to purchase his firearms, he lied on the application, but it wasn't discovered because somebody in the federal government didn't do their job, didn't enter the conviction information, didn't enter the bad conduct discharge. And so this individual was able to purchase weapons legally and then hunt down people in a small church. Why did he choose that church? Well, come to find out as this investigation is progressing, that his former in-laws were congregants of this church. So it seems that he targeted them. They weren't in the church at the time, but it didn't matter to this guy. He went in there and he killed 28 people, including children, babies, grandparents. It's insane what this man did. But who was responsible for ending this attack? It was the dichotomy of this man. It was a good citizen with a gun. He heard the gunfire. He looked across the street from where he was, barefoot, ran out of his house, saw the carnage, saw the shooting taking place, realized what was taking place, and went and armed himself with his own rifle. Then he came out of his home, and he engaged this suspect in a gunfight. Now, he had no military training, no police training. He's a plumber, 57 years old, a local plumber, Stephen Williford. I'm sorry, 55 years old. But he recognized his duty, and he engaged this suspect in a gunfight. The suspect, who was armed with a long rifle, who was wearing tactical gear, including a body armor vest, well, he was no match for the plumber from Sutherland Springs. The plumber shot him. He was effective with his gunfire, as was later found, and he hit the suspect several times. The suspect dropped his rifle, jumped into his car, and took off. Well, at that point, Sutherland Springs plumber and hero Stephen Williford wasn't done yet. He commandeered a vehicle that happened to be just driving by. He told the driver, who he'd never met before, "We have to chase that man. He killed people." This driver said, "Get in. We're going after him." And they did. And they chased him at high speeds. They called the sheriff's department. They said, "We're chasing the guy who shot these people." And they chased him until the suspect crashed after he lost control. And at that point, these heroes didn't leave the scene until the police department got there, and they found him dead in the car, possibly dead from a gunshot wound that he himself inflicted after he had been wounded by our hero. That has yet to be determined. But I want you to understand this. A bad guy with a gun was taken out by a good guy with a gun. So when the gun control advocates, who immediately came out screaming for more laws, screaming for gun control, gun control, gun control, they never said one word about how this was resolved, because a good guy with a gun took care of business. Now, I heard an interview with this man, Stephen Williford. As I said, he's got no tactical training, he's got no military background, and yet he recognized that this guy had body armor on and aimed his weapon where he knew the suspect would be most vulnerable, along the seams of the vest. That's how good this guy was. And that's how effective he was with his firepower. A lot of law enforcement officers could learn tactics from this guy. And in the interview that he gave to the media, it was clear that he understood the gravity of what he had done. That he had taken a life, no matter how justified it was. And this man, while a hero, is going to need to deal with that situation, just like law enforcement officers all over this country deal with the realities of their job when they have to take a life. So I'm going to segue from there into a very sad story that also took place. And that is that a veteran police sergeant took his own life while sitting in his office. A veteran of more than two decades of law enforcement, he used his own firearm to kill himself. He is the second one this week on duty to kill himself. This is heartbreaking to me. The amount of law enforcement officers who are taking their own lives is dramatically rising. The fact that they are doing it on duty is a statement of the pain that they are in. Law enforcement agencies around this country are dropping the ball. They are not recognizing when their own law enforcement officers are hurting, when they are in pain, when they are in need. They are not responsive. They are killing their own people. And why are they doing that? For money. Because they don't want to pay to get these officers treated. Does that sound harsh? Well, you're damn right it is. Because these law enforcement officers deserve better. Officers around this country are giving their health, are giving their lives for their communities, and law enforcement officers around this country are being abused day in and day out by the very communities that they serve. A couple of years ago, you'll remember that the vicious attack on the Baton Rouge Police Department and Baton Rouge Sheriffs took place. A follower of the Black Lives Matter movement traveled to Baton Rouge to retaliate for the killing of Alton Sterling, who was justifiably killed in the line of duty by officers when he tried to pull a gun and shoot the officers. This punk came in with a high-powered rifle, opened fire, killing several Baton Rouge police officers and sheriffs, and he also shot and critically wounded several others, including Nick Toulier. Nick Toulier was shot numerous times. Yesterday, I read one of the most heartbreaking Facebook posts I can imagine. Nick Toulier's father and mother begging for help because the community that he served is not paying his medical bills. That's right. They're not paying his medical bills. He is so critically injured. He is facing a lifetime of rehabilitation. And what did their community do? Now, this guy's only making $35,000 a year as a deputy sheriff. They threw him away. This is absolutely unconscionable. And it's happening all over the country. It makes me sick. Why should law enforcement officers have to put up a GoFundMe account in order to pay for their medical treatment? We must do something about it. I am going to do something about it. I am going to announce very soon how you and I together are going to combat this. We are going to combat this abuse of our law enforcement officers. We must do this together. These cops around this country are dying needlessly. They're not getting their treatment for post-traumatic stress. They are killing themselves in their own police agencies, in their own police cars, because they are not getting the treatment that they need. Police officers who have been shot in the line of duty, who have been disabled in the line of duty, are losing their health, losing their life, losing their insurance because their own departments and their own communities are turning their backs on them. This is not only unjust. This is not only something that we as a nation must combat. It is something that we must unite against. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. I want to take a minute and tell you about an incredible security company. Now, I've dealt with a lot of security folks, and some have been less than professional. This company is amazing, JSD Protective Services. Now, they're all over the country, and they do amazing stuff. They're armed security. They do courier work. They do private investigations. They do it all, and they do it well. And the reason that they do it so well is because of their training. They put their folks through some amazing training that's very comparable to law enforcement training. So JSD Protective Services, they're all over the United States, and you can find them at JSDProtectiveServices.com. That's JSDProtectiveServices.com. For all your security needs, they are the best. Give them a call. Or actually, hit them up on their website, JSDProtectiveServices.com. Before we take a walk into the interview room, one thing I wanted to let you know is that I recently had the honor of being a keynote speaker down in Texas. And I got to tell you that one of the things that I really enjoy is getting to meet personally with the people that listen to this radio program. So if you would like to talk to me about addressing your group, whether it is a law enforcement or a civic group or even a volunteer group, let me know. Contact me at randysutton@americaoutloud.com. Thanks. Now let's take a walk into the interview room.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Today in the interview room of Blue Labs Radio, the voice of American law enforcement is Roger Rudd. Now, Roger's got something pretty interesting going on. He's a former police officer from a few years ago, let's just say that. And now he runs the Blue Lives Matter comedy tour. Roger, thanks for being on Blue Labs Radio.
Well, thank you very much, LT. And one thing I'd like to say with all due respect is Roger, R-O-D-D, that's Rod. Everybody wants to say Rudd, but it happens all the time.
Roger Rod.
There it is.
Okay, listen. I don't want to say that sounds like a porno actor's name, but that sounds like a porno actor's name.
It does, and I've been carrying that leg iron my entire life, and believe it or not, it's not a stage name. It actually is my real name all of my life, and my God, that's why I never make fun of anyone's name.
Okay. I understand. So tell me about the Blue Lives Matter comedy tour.
That'll be my pleasure, sir. There are 8 of us. There are 3 white officers, 1 Puerto Rican, 4 black. We're all current or former police officers that have 20 or more years of stand-up comedy. One has over 35. I myself have 27. And we're from all different branches of law enforcement all over the country. And we got started at Gotham in New York back in April. We're just getting the tour going. We've done about 5 or 6 shows. And it's gone over very well from particularly the officers who have shown up and the public who has as well. And we're very optimistic. We give a portion of every successful show, meaning if I don't do well at the door, I can't afford to do it. But if there is a successful show, we give a portion to the families of fallen officers. And that's one of the things that we're about, is being on the side of the guys who are doing the right thing, the men and women, I must say, who are doing the right thing.
That's awesome. I mean, I love your concept. Where have you performed with your current comedy tour, Blue Lives Matter comedy tour? Where have you performed recently?
Recently, the most recent show was at the Comedy Palace in San Diego, and unfortunately, we didn't do as well there at the door as we wanted to. It was a furious and a lengthy social media concept that we put out towards it, and we just didn't get a large turnout. But of the people that did show, many of them were local law enforcement, and they have pledged very much to put us out there on the map and let people know what it is that we're doing. Now, we did very well in Connecticut and in Gotham and New York, and we also did very well at Tommy T's in Pleasanton and did a couple of shows out there. And it does seem as though the demographics are very key to what we're going to have showing up. As you know, it's a very polarized issue. When you say Blue Lives Matter or you say Black Lives Matter, that's one of the problems that I see with America today, is nobody ever looks for a middle. That immediately Black Lives Matter runs to the side of every police officer as a racist white police officer that wakes up every day with nothing else to do except put another notch in his gun to an unarmed black person. And unfortunately, there are far too many that, when you say Blue Lives Matter, assume that they can never do any wrong, and they're human beings, they do make mistakes. So I'd like to see something somewhere in the middle where there's a little more of a humanizing to the police officers, and maybe open a dialogue to where we can get somewhere about solving this issue rather than seeing what we're doing now.
Well, is that what the tour is about, bringing people together?
It really is more about humanizing police officers, and the mantra that we use is we all laugh the same, which is the way I really see things should be, is that we are people. And as you well know, I bow in deference, sir, to your 34 years of service. And I know you probably don't toot your own whistle enough on this show, but you've done a long time in serving law enforcement, and certainly not in easy places to do it. And as you well know, the job is very, very demanding, and it has a very difficult side to it emotionally to deal with. And humor is the way police officers get through it, and it is particularly dark humor. That's how we survive, just as all first responders and doctors and nurses and ER rooms. The only way you can get through this suffering and misery is you have to find a way to humorize it and make everyone realize that we are people, that we hurt just as everyone else does.
Well, the guys that tour with you, there you said there are some that are current law enforcement as well?
Yes, there are. We have a Michigan State trooper named Dwayne Gill, and we have Mike Mancini, who's on the job in Santa Cruz, California. We tease him a lot because he's up there in the sticks with the surfers, but nonetheless, as you well know, that is no longer a sleepy little beach town, and it's not an easy job. No matter where you are, it really isn't an easy job.
So when you're on tour, you're going all over the country. How do these guys get the time off to jump on tour with you?
Well, many of us have been comics per se for much longer than we are police officers now, because we've been out of it for a while. We have Cliff Yates, for example. He's back in New York. He was 25 years on the job, and the entire time he was doing stand-up, a lot of times he would get in the bag. He would go on stage when he got off tour, and he started performing that way. So a lot of them did it in conjunction. We did it as a hobby. Some of us went into it after, as myself, when I got out of law enforcement, I got into the entertainment business, and that's when I began. But Dwayne Gill, who is still on the job as a Michigan State trooper, he's getting himself a nice, easy desk job towards the twilight of his career, and so he gets a lot of time off. And we have others that are 20 and out, such as Mark DeMeo in New York. He's a retired homicide detective in New York City with NYPD, and he's been doing stand-up for some time now as well. So it's all different, varied things. And I really do have a very loyal and very solid working crew. I'm very proud of these fellas. They've been with me the whole way.
I think it's a great idea. Now, when you're on tour, when you're doing these shows, is it all police humor? I mean, is everything based on the job, or do you branch out in, as a regular comedian, so to speak?
I got it.
If there's such a thing as a regular comedian.
That's well said right there, Lou. That is one intelligent question you just came with.
I come up with them occasionally.
And I would say more than occasionally. I've been watching you, and you have, by the way, I would like to give you your kudos, and not just, I am in Hollywood and it's all about me, but it isn't always all about me. And you have been stellar on all of the appearances I've seen on television recently, particularly in light of what happened in Vegas. And we really need to have more folks like you, but you're doing a brilliant job, and it's very appreciated by a lot of us.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. I mean, you know, I do my best, and you know, it's for me, it's really important to be the voice of American law enforcement for those men and women that simply don't have a voice. That's what I try to be.
Well, the voice they're getting is coming from a way too slanted point of view, and a lot of times, what I like to really do is, I know that we are all dependent upon it because of the lines of work we're in, but I like to point the finger of blame where it belongs for the tension that exists in this country. And it's a hate-breeding, fear-mongering media who every day shows an extreme version of one transgression or another. And it seems like they're building this wall of hatred and anger because it sells. And right. One of the things we need to diffuse that is the kind of thing that we're doing now, and meaning the tour and you yourself putting a voice out there for the other side. And it is appreciated, do believe me.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I really am. And I, you know, humor is one of those things that that does bring people together. And you know, you're right. We all laugh the same.
Well, you did ask, and as I said, I didn't really address the question. Most of the officers that are also stand-ups, many of them do a lot of cop-related material, although there are some that do just hours of any kind of material you would like, meaning Kevin Jordan. He was on the job for 7 years with LAPD, but he has been a stand-up for about 35 years. He's the most senior of all of us. He works cruise ships, corporate gigs, and he can do grandma-friendly material, any different type that you would choose to. And of all of us, I would say the least amount of cop humor is, just logistically speaking, me, because I have the least amount of years. But I do have to do a little bit of it just because I feel as though it would be appropriate for the show. But as you well know, there is a lot of not just dark humor, but there's a lot of really humorous things that do happen on the job that you really would have to explain to the public, because all they ever see is the TV and movie version, and they think that this is something that it very much isn't.
You know, I look back on my career, and I laughed my butt off much of the time with some of the crazy stuff that we saw. And of course, sharing that locker room humor, if you will, that was part of the entertainment of being on the job.
It's the way we survive a lot of times as well, and plus the fact that, you know, one of the times I recall really was I was rolling with a veteran cop when I was on my first year, and we spent a shift really doing nothing more than driving around, stopping and seeing everybody that he knew, stopped here, said hello to this person, stopped at this station, grabbed a cup of coffee here, turned on a radio for a while and played Name That Tune for the next round of lunch. And at the end of the shift, I said, I cannot believe we got paid for what we just did. And he said to me the verse that I will never forget. We don't get paid for what we do. We get paid for what we might have to do.
That's really said. Now, that's a veteran cop talking right there.
Certainly was. And one of the things I was very good at is shutting up and listening when I was new, because I wanted to come home alive.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. So when you're out doing your gig here, how do people find you in order to book you?
Oh, that is fantastic. Thank you for asking that. Well, first of all, we are really struggling hard on social media to get us well known. On Twitter, we are Blue Lives Comedy. On Instagram, we are Blue Lives Matter Comedy Tour. We are also Blue Lives Matter Comedy Tour on Facebook. And me personally, on Instagram, I am at Roger Rodd. That's all one word, lowercase, R-O-G-E-R-R-O-D-D. And the same with Twitter, at Roger Rodd, all lowercase. And on Facebook, it is / R-O-G-E-R dot R-O-D-D dot the number 5.
So all right. That's R-O-G-E-R. All right. That's a lot of stuff. That's a lot of stuff to remember. Let's talk about something. What since you've been doing this, give me some of your perspective on how it's being received. Is your audience generally law enforcement, or do you tailor this for the general public?
It's for the general public and law enforcement, and we have gotten a good solid percentage of law enforcement that show up. And, you know, at the risk of being self-serving, I did the very first premiere at Gotham in New York, and we put out a very vigorous social media presence, and probably I would say somewhere around 15 or 20 NYPDs came to the show, and I literally was getting tearful hugs from the men and women on the job saying, "You don't know how badly we needed to have this. Our morale is at an all-time low." And it's something that makes us feel like it's all worth it, regardless of the fact that financially we didn't come out as well as we wanted to. But again, as I said, I've got guys that go out there and they believe in me. Kevin Jordan and Cliff Yates came out on their own dime just to get us off the ground. And we didn't come out well financially, and it didn't matter. It was important to them as well.
I would say that this—I mean—you're really delving into a very difficult, as far as financially go. If you don't have a big name, you don't have the advertising budget to get out there. You know, people don't know. So how do you get an audience? That's really what the critical question is.
Well, that's the sad thing that nobody recognizes is show business and the entertainment in general has taken an enormous beating from the actual internet and social media because, as I say all the time, and I'm going to clean it up for your radio show, is my name is Roger Rodden, and in front of it are the words, "Who the F is?"
Yeah.
Because people don't come and see somebody they haven't heard of, which is one of the things that made me at least believe in this concept. Is the Blue Lives Matter comedy tour. Nobody ever hears that name and says, "Gee, I wonder what that's all about." At least there is a recognition there. So people that are at least amenable to the idea of, "I wonder what it'd be like to see a bunch of cops that are also comedians." So
yeah,
we would get.
I would think that would be a pretty good draw. I mean, that would personally, you know, I'd come to see it, hearing about it.
Well, I can't tell you how much we appreciate you having us on the show. We heard about you, obviously, from the television, and you are somewhat of a star in your own right, and it's very kind of you to have us on to help us get this off the ground. And anything we can ever do, certainly you are always, you and anybody and all of yours are always a very welcome guest on any of the shows we do anywhere.
Well, as Clint Eastwood said in Dirty Harry, a man's got to know his limitations.
I'm afraid I got to correct you on that one, Lou. That was in the second one. I think that was Magnum Force.
You're right. The one I'm thinking of, he's a legend in his own mind.
Oh, yes. We need to bring more Clints back. We have way too many people that don't understand what Dirty Harry was all about.
You know, I heard he gave an interview not too long ago where he said that they could never get Dirty Harry financed today. It would never be.
Oh, God, no. Oh, God, no. Oh, my God, the bleeding hearts would be all over. He shot him without giving him a fair trial. Yeah, but he just saw him stabbing someone. Yeah, I know, but he's, you know, the whole concept of presumption of innocence, it was a nice constitutional ideal. But when you are actually in the act of carjacking somebody, shooting five people, under the camera with the helicopters watching, I kind of think you did it.
You kind of think. When you're doing your shows, is it family oriented stuff, or is it more adult oriented?
Well, frankly, these are great questions. I'm really glad you had me on. I appreciate it. The truth of the matter is, because there are eight of us, we can do grandma-friendly material if that is what's called for, because we will do corporate. But if you let us do what it is that we want to do, leave the wife and kids at home. not the wife. I mean the kids at home, not the wife. But
bring the girlfriend. Leave the wife at home.
I am very, very, very rough. And I know that I am not your ready for prime time type of comic, and I never have been. But one of the things, I have very edgy material. And when we were in New York at Connecticut, we brought on a gentleman named Bill Cannon, who was a 27-year NYPD homicide cop. And he did a bit that was absolutely hilarious, but it was as dark as you could get. He was talking about that he was on the 9/11 brigade after they had to clean up the mess from the building.
And how do you make comedy out of that?
Well, that was how it went. It was brilliant. I'm not doing this bit any justice, but he was talking about is one of the jobs they had was they had to take barges full of the building remnants out to the landfill, and they were having a problem because the seagulls were eating the body parts that were in the remnants
Holy
of the World Jesus. Trade Centers.
Oh, my God.
And he went into this whole, and you could see the audience wincing, and he was, and there was a big thing about what they were going to do about the seagulls. And then he went and segued into the, he was also the one that was when Captain Sully landed in the Hudson River. And the punchline to the bit was along the lines of he went up and introduced himself. I know you don't know me, Captain Sully, but my name is Officer Blank. And he said, of course I know you. Where were you when the seagull was running into my engine? So it was a very funny bit the way he did it. And now two comics later, I go up and it went over very well, I can add. Two comics later, I go up and did my bit, and they groaned at me, and I said, excuse me, is this the same audience that was laughing at the seagulls eating the body parts, and now you're going to turn on me? So anyway, there's always a way to play it off to where you can keep the humor in it, but it is, as I said, it's dark humor. A lot of it is, but given the proper scenario, we can do grandma-friendly. Particularly, we have some of the comics there that have done corporate, and believe it or not, I've actually done church gigs. It's just you have to be very toned down. It's kind of like when you wear a suit, you behave a little better.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. So, if it'll let me give you the opportunity here to talk to my audience and do a couple pieces.
A couple of pieces. Wow. Okay. I never even thought about doing that. One of the main bit that I do, I can kind of explain. It's, I feel as though I should do kind of a cop bit, and it's a visual thing. I have a pair of eyeglasses I keep in my pocket for the show, and what I do is I explain. I was on patrol once, and I driving along, I see two very young kids just pounding the snot out of each other, and I decided it's time to play officer friendly, and I pulled over, and I walked up to them, and I said, hey, guys, what's this all about? And they pointed to a pair of glasses laying on the ground, and I pick up the glasses, and I say, well, I see why you guys are fighting over these. There's a lot of really cool things you can do with glasses. And I kind of stuck them under my lip and pushed each other. You can make a little mustache out of them, and now the kids start to giggle. And then I put them in my mouth and put the pimples out, and I said, or you could play like you're a walrus with them. Now they're hysterically laughing and high-fiving each other. And I said, all right, you guys, now tell me, what was this fight all about anyway? Kid says, well, it all started when he peed on my glasses. So that was my officer friendly bit.
I like it.
Unfortunately, that one really did happen.
Well, what is it? Life imitates art, right?
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah, I'm sure you've got a collection I would love to hear sometime. And it would certainly be something to listen to 34 years of experience on the job that you had. You said 10 years, I think you said, on the East Coast somewhere?
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you a story, which I find comical. And this is when I first knew I was going to love being a cop. It was when I was a small-town cop. It was in Princeton, New Jersey, and we had like 30 cops. And I had just gotten out of the police academy, and got, you know, really strict police academy, New Jersey State Police, strictly military. And I got hired when I was 19 years old, right? So I,
wow, it's early.
They had just changed the age of majority. So you could vote and you could drink. But one thing you couldn't do, because of the federal law, you couldn't buy ammunition. So I'm getting ready to go to the police academy, and I had to have my mother go with me to buy my bullets. And that's something she never let me forget for my entire career. But I had just gotten out of the academy, and we didn't have a formal field training program back in those days. You rode with a senior guy till he said, okay, you can go on your own. And it was my first night by myself. I had my brand spanking new police uniform on. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I got a call that there was a man bleeding to assist the ambulance at the Princeton University Graduate School housing. Now, these are literally the rocket scientists, right? And I get there, and there are these two old hairbag cops that got there before me. And one of them had this very heavy Scottish brogue. His name was Billy. And Billy is waiting for me because I come screeching to a halt. I got my lights and siren on, even though it's 2 o'clock in the morning. There's not a soul on the road, but I can do it, right? So I pull up to a screeching halt, jump out with my first aid kit, and there's Billy is at the door waiting for me, and he says, "Lad, this is your investigation." So I'm jump in with my brand new uniform on, got my first aid kit, and I run into this apartment, and the only furniture in this apartment is a picnic table and a bench. And on top of that picnic table, there is a stew pot full of ice and blood. And there's blood everywhere and a big old butcher knife on the table. And I look around, and there's this Asian guy in the corner just standing there. He's wearing a black overcoat, and he's just looking at me. And I take this in, and I go in my best police voice, "Excuse me, sir, are you bleeding?" And he goes, "Yes, I am." Just nonchalant as that. And I said, "Well, where?" And he opened up his overcoat, and what was left of his penis was dangling by like a little string, and blood is just pulsating out. And I'm looking at this guy, and he's not showing any pain at all. And I figured something, somebody did this to this guy. So the ambulance gets there. And I remembered my first aid, though. I opened up my first aid kit, and I handed him a compress. And I said, "Here, apply direct pressure." Because I wasn't going to be holding that thing, right? So
right.
The ambulance gets there. They package him up. I'm riding with him in the ambulance because I figure he might die. And I want to get a dying declaration from this guy to find out who did this to him. So I asked him, I said, "Who did this to you?" And he goes, "Officer, I have sex problem." That's P-L-O-B, Sex problem.
Wow.
I masturbate too much. Interfere with my studies. The guy had failed a math test that day and blamed it on the fact that
he was, my God.
His masturbation schedule, instead of altering that, he decided to take care of the problem and put that little thing on the picnic table and took that knife and went whack. And that's when I knew I was going to love being a cop.
Wow. Well, he's very lucky that he was still conscious, because if direct pressure to stop the bleeding would have been required, he was going to die.
Yeah, that was going to be mouth-to-ear resuscitation.
Yeah, that was going to be, "Call the medics. This is where my job ends and someone else's begins."
That's exactly right.
Which reminds me of that you were saying about cop humor. This is a great example. When I was probably my second year, we got invited to the robbery homicide division's annual Christmas party. I don't think it's universal, but PC 187 in California is homicide. What is that pretty standard to where
that's just California.
That's just California. Okay, well, PC 187, right? So I come walking into the Christmas party, and this was the decor that they had. There was a giant coffin that they had full of ice and beer, and on the side of it was written PC 187. Our day begins when yours ends.
Perfect. Perfect. our homicide guys in the Metro used to have that on their hats, but it became politically incorrect, so that ended.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, I would think so, too.
Wow. But that is what you would call the one you told me about, the Asian guy. That is what we would call, I'm not going to say the word on TV, but let's say the word D. That's a D joke in its finest right there.
Yeah. The best part is, it wasn't a joke. That's
I know it wasn't
it
a
really
joke.
Funny.
Here's the real question. Did it ever work again? Was that the end of it?
No, believe it or not. When it was funny when we got to the hospital, every nurse in the hospital had come down to the emergency room to see this guy who did this to himself. And they actually sewed it back on. Now, how well it worked, that I never got that from him. But I used to see him around town all the time. And I just got that smile on my face, wondering the same thing. But they did sew it back on.
Well, he made a point to himself, at least.
Yeah, I think maybe I might have just modified my schedule. You know what I mean?
There are other things you could do, perhaps, you know, hormone pills or hormone depressants or something, or maybe, I don't know, maybe stop watching porn. There's a lot of other remedies I'd have thought of first.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. But that, you know what, when we talk about the stuff that entertains us as law enforcement officers, you know, that was on my first night by myself. Believe me, the tragic stuff that we saw and see as law enforcement officers is mind-numbing sometimes. But there is also that humorous part that I enjoyed so much. That's probably one of the things that I miss most about not still being, you know, active duty, is some of the great funny stuff that I used to see.
You know, you're so right about that, and the fact that if you did the job 34 years, the two of us are very well aware of the fact that you're an adrenaline junkie.
Absolutely.
You miss the
yes.
action. You can't get around. And I would be lying through my teeth if I said that I wasn't. And if you happen to go on the website, BlueLivesMatterComedyTour.com, and when you see what I am, I'm the last comic on the reel. I've got very, very long hair, and if I didn't kind of need that for films I'm involved in still, things along the lines, I would love to be a sheriff reserve, but unfortunately they have hair restrictions that are right straight out of Gomer Pyle, USMC. It would take me out of way too much action as an actor and as a comic, but I would still love to do it. I would absolutely love to be on the job just as an assistant some way or another, because it is something that there's, when it's bad, it's as bad as something can ever be. When it's as good, there's nothing better.
That's absolutely true. And you know, the reality is that although cops have been portrayed in the media as very self-serving, brutal people, the reality is that almost everybody does the job because they actually think that they can make a difference in the lives of other people in positive ways. And that's the reality, and that's the truth that we need to get out there.
Some of the finest, bravest human beings I've ever known. And you really know who somebody is when you're on the job, or when it comes down to the life and death situations that you are going to find yourself in, or you see how they handle these horrific tragedies that we have to deal with. Nobody, as I always point out, nobody ever calls a cop because something nice happened.
They don't say,
hey, would you like to come to my birthday party? You're in a world of negativity at all times, all the way down to where what people don't get, when I used to, way, way, way back in the days when I first was starting to delve into the showbiz game, I got hired instantly on the spot to teach traffic school because I had been an officer. And one of the things that I tried explaining to people is you never know what this officer just did who pulled you over. You don't know that he may not have just come from the home of giving a death notification to a family who just learned that their little boy is never coming home again, because all those sirens they heard was their kid getting carted off to the ER and he didn't make it. And one of the things that the public doesn't know is as soon as you are going to make a death notification, the first thing they teach you is get everybody seated, because a lot of times you tell them that if they're standing up, they fall over and faint or let out a blood-curdling scream and then faint. So now you're doing that, you finish that job, you get back in your car, and you just want to do anything to take your mind off of it. Somebody passes you 20 miles over the speed limit, you pull them over, and all you were going to do is just give them a, hey, would you slow down, this isn't a good idea, and first words out of their mouth, is this going to make your quota? Don't you have anything better to do? Why don't you go eat some donuts? And then, oh, really, you want to play like that? And then you throw the book at them, and what do they say? What an a-hole cop I had to deal with today. Maybe it was you.
So anyway, we're running out of time here, Roger. Give me that website again so people, my listeners, can take a look at your website and see some of your material.
Okay. I'm going to go that and social media very slowly, if that would be okay, sir.
Sure.
It would be BlueLivesMatterComedyTour.com is the website. Our social media, Twitter, is Blue Lives Comedy. Our Instagram is Blue Lives Matter Comedy Tour. And it's also the same on Facebook, Blue Lives Matter Comedy Tour. I'll leave my personal off of that. If you hit the Blue Lives Matter, I'll be happy. And Lou, I cannot thank you enough for having me on this show. And also thank you so much for what you're doing for the men and women out there that are doing the job that nobody else ever, you know, when I hear people like, oh, I don't know, I shouldn't mention any name, but like Bill Maher, who is normally a fairly intellectual person, but when he says and sneers at the fact that it's not the most dangerous job in the world, more coal miners are killed every year than police officers. Really, Bill? Next time your house is getting broken into, call up a coal miner.
Yeah, some of the madness that goes on with these celebrities is just that's a whole nother conversation, buddy.
Yes, but you're becoming a bit of a celebrity, and thanks so much for speaking on our side. We appreciate you very much.
I thank you for that, and I appreciate you coming on to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. You know, if there's one thing we can all use, it's a laugh.
It was my honor, my privilege, and I hope to see you at a show and meet you in person. Thanks so much.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Life Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to those law enforcement officers who have given their lives in the line of duty during this week. Unfortunately, I have four names to read this week. The first is Correctional Officer Wendy Shannon of the North Carolina Department of Public Safety, Division of Prisons. Correctional Officer Wendy Shannon, Correction Enterprises Manager Veronica Darden, and Correctional Officer Justin Smith were killed during an escape attempt from the Passaquoddy Correctional Institute at approximately 3 p.m. On October 12, 2017, several inmates ignited a fire inside the prison's specialty sewing plant as a diversion. The inmates were then attacked, responding correction officers with hammers and scissors obtained in the sewing plant. Prison personnel and responding fire crews were able to bring the fire under control and prevent the escape. Officer Shannon was transported to Sentara Norfolk General Hospital, where she passed away on October 30th, 2017. Four inmates were charged with first-degree murder as a result of the incident. Officer Shannon had served with the North Carolina Division of Prison for 4 years. Correctional Officer Wendy Shannon, North Carolina Department of Public Safety, Division of Prisons, end of watch, Monday, October 30th, 2017. The second is Deputy Sheriff James Martin Wallace of the Richmond County Sheriff's Office in Georgia. Deputy Sheriff James Wallace suffered a fatal heart attack while participating in the department's annual physical fitness assessment at the Wilson Family YMCA on Wheeler Road. Other deputies on scene immediately started CPR. He was transported to Doctors Hospital, where he passed away a short time later. Deputy Wallace has served with the Richmond County Sheriff's Office for 7 years. His end of watch, Thursday, November 2nd, 2017. Senior Trooper Thomas Nipper of the Texas Department of Public Safety, Texas Highway Patrol. Senior Trooper Tom Nipper killed in a vehicle crash while conducting a traffic stop on southbound I-35 near Midway Drive in Temple. He was sitting in his patrol car during the stop when it was struck from behind by a pickup truck. The impact caused the patrol car to strike the stopped vehicle and Trooper Nipper. He was transported to Baylor Scott and White Medical Center, where he succumbed to his injuries. Trooper Nipper had served with the Texas Highway Patrol for almost 35 years. He survived by his wife and 3 children. Senior Trooper Thomas Nipper, Texas Department of Public Safety, end of watch, Saturday, November 4, 2017. And the fourth officer this week is Police Officer Jamie Cox of the Rockford Police Department in Illinois. Police officer Jamie Cox was killed during a traffic stop near the intersection of East State Street and Dawn Avenue at approximately 1 a.m. The vehicle attempted to flee during the incident and dragged Officer Cox before crashing two blocks north of the initial incident. Despite suffering critical injuries, Officer Cox was able to call for assistance. Responding officers found him on the ground near the crash scene. He was transported to a local hospital where he succumbed to his injuries. The driver of the vehicle that fled was found deceased in his vehicle from gunshot wound. Officer Cox has served with the Rockford Police Department for 1 year and had previously served with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources Division of Law Enforcement. He is a veteran of the U.S. Army National Guard. Police Officer Jamie Cox, Rockford Police Department, Illinois. End of watch, Sunday, November 5th, 2017. Each of these officers gave their lives in the line of duty for the communities that they serve. May they rest in peace. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. Now, I'm your host, Randy Sutton. You can find me at Facebook. If you look under Facebook and you see Randy Sutton Public Figure, just like that or follow it, and you can see everything that I write and post. You can communicate with me there as well. I answer all of my messages personally. You can also find me at Twitter at LT Randy Sutton, LT Randy Sutton at Twitter. And you can find my books at Amazon.com. I have 4 books, and I think you'll like them. A Cop's Life, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, True Blue to Protect and Serve, and The Power of Legacy. Thanks again.